This is The Annex, a sociology podcast. I'm Joseph Cohen from Queens College in the City University of New York. For more, visit theannexpodcast.com. To talk about the hubbub that emerged on Twitter and then eventually...
Which one?
Yeah, right. Take your pick. The one that emerged in Inside Higher Ed over the ESS. Basically, what happened was the ESS listed speakers for its 2018 annual meetings, and there was some blowback. Some people felt like it was not diverse. Some felt like the lineup was very elitist, only representing the Ivies with a smattering of other schools for good measure. Did you guys see this? Was there any reaction from you guys?
Well, my primary reaction was... why are we surprised? That's my primary reaction.
Surprised at what? At the panel or at people complaining about the panel?
Actually, I was slightly surprised at people complaining about those plenary sessions, because I kind of felt like it just seems kind of like the norm.
Oh, yeah. I look at this and I see like a panel at ESS that is all that looks like my doctoral committee. Is like the sun rising in the east. Why would I be surprised by that?
Yeah, and like literally your committee, right? Because so many of them were faculty at Princeton while we were there, or they're now.
This is, I came out of Chicago. This doesn't surprise me at all because, you know, this is what we do as sociologists. I'm also a criminologist, and it's amazing how many criminologists are former deviants, right? They even admit to being deviants, but we study stratification, and one of my senior colleagues of color, Verna Keith, always says we're great at studying stratification because we're so good at reproducing it. And it's not even like, I don't think they went out of their way to do this. I don't think anyone... like consciously does this. This is just that they got their friends together like they normally do. Mm-hmm. And they want to have a conversation with them in public. And that's, right. I think this is reproduced not just at the Easterns. You can see this across most conferences. And like Leslie, I'm not surprised by this at all. As much as I'm kind of surprised by the reaction, like what are people really, what do they want to get out of this, right? I go back to my social movement days prior to becoming a professor. And I think there's the actions and the reaction, right? Mm-hmm. So as a community organizer, you say something or do something because you want a reaction. So what do people really want to see here? What's the major change they expect?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so very similar to what John's mentor had said, my friend, the journalist Megan McArdle, will always say that academics think of themselves as very egalitarian, but they can walk into the room, any room, and immediately size up the status of everyone there like their courtiers at Versailles.
Yeah. Well, it's the name badge scan, right? That's how it goes, and I think that's why people care about the prestige of their institution.
Because that's a perennial feature in Kieran Healy's ASA Bingo.
Which is one of the most genius pieces of sociology comedy there is. It's one of my favorite things. But like on the other hand, so let me try to play devil's advocate just to I think of like organizing the ESS must be a big job. Like I have never participated in it. It seems like a really big job with a lot of moving parts. And what about the idea that, all right, you got to fill up the lineup and you want to click that off your to-do list. So you just reach out to people who you know are going to be draws, who you know can deliver a good speech. And they might say, all right, well, this is a preliminary list. I went out, I populated it, and it's, we can add people. Like the ESS says, we've heard you, we've added people. They put more women on the list. I assume they put more non-white scholars on the list. So is everything all good, or is there still something that we're not confronting here?
So what's funny to me is this, I think the main thing that you said there that's really the tell is the draw, right? Is that if you're putting a plenary, this is not just a panel, right? This is a plenary session. It's supposed to be a big draw. It's going to be in the big room. And, you know, for that, status and reputation and fame almost has to be a big part of it because you're trying to fill the room. And you can make a good argument that that shouldn't be the orientation. I myself usually, well, actually pretty uniformly skip plenary sessions because I think they're not that interesting. So you can make a good argument that we shouldn't have these kind of like big superstar panels of just, you know, pontificating. But if you are going to have them, you almost by definition have to have famous people who are going to have a draw, because if you open up to people who've never heard of, nobody's going to show up.
I mean, that's true, right? But is it just because you haven't heard of someone doesn't mean other people haven't, you know? Mm. It's kind of like in, you know, another big job is when you are on a job search committee, right? And one of the ways that you try and get around the work of reading 300 to 400 files is you call your buddies and you say, hey, do you have, if you're looking for an assistant, you say, do you have any promising students coming out, right? And you rely on the word of your buddies to tell you which of those files you should pull out so that you can just scan the rest. Well, what we know about social reproduction, right, which we learned, first year in, in classical and contemporary theory, is our buddies tend to be just like us, right? And when we think about mentoring in graduate schools, what do our mentees look like, right, compared to us? So if you are trying to have any kind of diversity, you know, within your selection process, whether it's gender, whether it's race, ethnicity, whether it's ideas, right, you need to get out of your social network and get out of your own wheelhouse in terms of the types of research and questions you think are interesting. And I do think I get it. Organizing one of these things is probably a huge hassle, right? And you do shortcuts and you say, well, who do I know, right? Who can I call? Well, like I said, if you want to ensure that you are getting the biggest crowd possible, I think you also need to think about diversity. And as I said, and it doesn't have to be just about gender, race and ethnicity, sexuality, etc. It can just be ideas and questions.
It could even be rank. But Joe, is this just about homophily? Is that what your question boils down to?
Well, I'm wondering if it's just it's a pragmatic choice where there's a big job and maybe not enough people to who are doing the task of organizing it. And is this like a practical oversight that people voiced a concern about and it's fixed? And I'm asking, is everybody happy with this, or are we just papering it over and not addressing the causes that ultimately created this first draft?
I see the issue less as homophily than status, right? It's not so much of because if you're talking about it in maybe it's homophily, status homophily, but that's kind of tautological, right? But I see this mostly as an issue of it's big, famous people who everybody's already heard of, which, again, I think is kind of in the nature of it. But the reason people are critical of that is they see it is that it's a cumulative advantage process where you need somebody who's famous in order to fill the room, but putting them in the plenary session makes them more famous. But that's how status works, right? Right. Status works in the form of a cumulative advantage process. It's just basic to it. And people can kind of like that or not like it. But again, I think it's kind of in the nature of if you're going to have a plenary session, it's going to work like this, which maybe is a good reason not to have a plenary session.
Can I ask you guys your opinion? How many well-known people in sociology are like Kim Kardashian famous? Like, they're famous for being famous. Like, nobody read their work, but they know that everybody knows them. And so they assume that they're great. You know, you understand what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Half this list, but I'm not going to tell you which half. I'm kidding about that.
It's also the jumbo shrimp oxymoronic problem here. If like you're sociology famous, are you really famous?
No, that one is
just really,
no.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue, right? So I think that's part of why I can't put too much stock in this whole argument, right? I understand the power prestige argument, but these things that we're going to continue to reproduce this does represent a much deeper and broader problem that, you know, Leslie's kind of touching on as well. It starts in the back rooms, and she's talking about jobs that were actually advertised, right? Mm. What about the shadow market, right? There's a whole shadow market in the academy where you see people moving institutions. And you're like, I didn't even know a job was advertised there, right? So this is a very small problem in terms of distribution of resources across the discipline.
Are you talking about a senior or junior? Because I feel like at junior, it's pretty bureaucratic and fair. Whereas senior, I think you have more of a point.
No. I was talking about junior.
She's talking about junior. I'm saying even within the within the advanced assistant or associate market, you don't have to be fresh out. But if you're going to say it's more fair, I think Leslie's point is to look at junior, just looking at straight juniors. I've seen the same thing where certain people, I've seen this works even with people who are coming from higher ranked institutions. If they're not in the right buddy system, I've seen their file get thrown out. They'll be at better institutions and have a great CV, and they're not in a buddy network of someone on the hiring committee. They won't make the long list or even the short list.
But isn't there sort of like I'm wondering, is there a world of elite sociology that includes the associations and the grad programs, and it's just its own contained universe? And there are like thousands of sociologists who are functioning apart from ESS or ASA. They don't hire from the elite schools, and like the discipline's just totally ignoring the existence of that. And maybe there's something to that argument.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I see that at ASAs, right? I totally see that. You know, I mean, you have like the one sort of like, you know, ASA version of People Magazine, you know, sort of getting together at the lobby bar, right? Doing that sort of thing, right? Being seen and watching. And then you have everybody else who's there to like, I'm going to sessions, right? Because I want to learn something. I'm going to meet up with my friends from grad school because this is the one time of the year I see them. And I'm happy to be away from my kids. I mean, and
hitting a nerve there.
Right? And, you know, and it seems to me, there are people who go to ASA to learn, right? To listen to other people's ideas, right? And to share their ideas. And then there is this other segment of the ASA that I actually believe they're above that, right? We're here to network. We're here to be seen. Okay, we're here to drink too, right? But, you know, and if we do go to sessions, we're only going to sessions where we're presenting or where there's someone there that I actually want to be able to talk to afterwards. And I think, I think that there are two ASAs going on while we're there.
I have to say, as someone from a less wealthy system, you gotta, if you don't have a research grant, I don't know how a lot of my colleagues could even afford to be part of the ASA. Like $300-$400 is a pretty heavy lift for membership fee for a lot of these people. I know that there's a different fee structure, but still.
Well, that's a whole different conversation about whether the ASA bites off more than it can chew. And, you know, one that I've been involved with for a while about, you know, should we have a minimal organization that just focuses on professional service, or should we have an organization that basically wants to be a lobbyist, which is much more expensive?
Well, that's for another episode. Should we wrap up this?
Just one more thought on this. So in that Inside Higher Ed, you had, you know, Huey complained about the panel. Fair enough. He has his opinion. And then Victor Nee basically said, you know, I don't think it's professional. You should have raised this privately, and I'd appreciate if you retracted it, which I also think is fair enough. But inside higher ed, Huey's complaining to inside higher ed, saying it was bullying and authoritarian that could have a chilling effect on academics' willingness to promote change from within their fields. Which
I'm sorry.
Which strikes me as like I'm complaining about you, and then you complain back about me, and then I say stop hitting me. You know, like if Nee had said, if you don't retract this, you know, we'll kick you off the board, or we'll make sure that you never present at ESS or something like that, I would be 100% on Huey's side. But he's just saying, I didn't appreciate that. I'd appreciate it if you retract it.
Well, even if he said that, even if he was like, you'll never work in this town again, sort of thing, right?
Well, that would be bullying.
Yeah, that would be bullying.
But he just said that. Could you please retract it? You know.
Right.
So so that struck me as a little funny. This kind of thing of like people who pick fights, and then as soon as somebody pushes back, even in a very appropriate fashion, they say, you know, you're oppressing me.
Well, I mean, the other thing though is, you know, this could also have been, you know, as some people have said, you know, it was just basically we invite people, not everybody says yes, and this is who you end up with.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, so again, you know, is this a problem? You know, was this done intentionally? I think actually the bigger point is the fact that this actually sparked a conversation somewhere.
How much you want to bet that fewer people say yes next year?
Oh, no.
Right. Because if you were Duncan Watts or for that matter, you know, or whomever. Would you,
Paul DiMaggio, would you want your name affiliated with this? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Would you want to have your name appearing on tweets that get 48 retweets and say, if you don't see a problem here, you might be part of the problem? It's like, I don't want to be a problem, so I'm just going to say no to this.
I don't think they care that much.
Yeah.
But it's really, if we're really about social activism, if that's what people are claiming they're doing, I don't see this panel as the problem, right? Yeah. That's my issue. If you want to do something for real, there are much bigger problems we can address. Yeah. It doesn't start in sociology. I don't have time to argue with sociologists about what panel they're putting together.
Yeah,
right?
I think you got to go. This is an instance of the fights are so vicious because the stakes are so small.
Yeah, the stakes are so small. Who cares about this plenary? Either go to it or don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. It's not like it's money. You know, there's a lot of time or even more important, you know, unless this panel is getting turned into a special edition in ASR or something, then I have an issue because I'd want to be on the panel.
But
unless it's a publication or money, I don't see what we're arguing about here. I mean, you can talk about stratification for stratification's sake and point out race, class, gender stratification all day. But I think I'm not going to argue with people whose heart may be in the right place. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to argue. I'm not even going to guess what their politics are necessarily. Mm-hmm. I just don't have time. Like you said, Leslie, you have family. You have your own institution.
Mm-hmm.
Who has time for this? I don't have time for stuff like this. So I saw this. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Actually, no, Matt. Matt's not a bad guy. Matt Huey, he's a good guy. But I'm like, what? I don't have time to argue.
You've been listening to The Annex, a sociology podcast. For more information, visit theannexpodcast.com. Music is by Lena Orsa. Our production team included Anika Chowdhury and Liseth Moreno. On behalf of the Annex team, I'm Joe Cohen. Thanks for listening.